move to the fourth case this morning, Schaefer v. Beazley.
May it please the Court. My name is Maurice Salem. I'm the attorney for the appellant plaintiff in this case, Mr. Schaefer. Your Honors, this case is about an inmate in a federal prison who needed medical treatment for the 8 months that he was scheduled to spend in the prison. Now, Your Honors, despite the letter from his doctors that gave warning to the prison, and that letter was distributed to the medical staff, to the doctor, and to the warden, that if this inmate does not receive the orthopedic treatment that he needs, he will suffer severe consequences. Now, despite them knowing this, they intentionally refused to give him this medical treatment, Your Honor. They also refused to send him to a nearby veteran hospital where he could easily receive that treatment. And they also refused to transfer him to another prison that has that medical treatment. Subsequently, the severe consequences that was predicted by his doctor did occur. Now, Your Honor, the government filed a 12B motion to dismiss on the grounds that Mr. Schaefer, the inmate, did not exhaust his administrative remedies. Now, the record shows that there are two administrative procedures that can be followed in this prison. The first one, called the administrative remedy procedure, and the second one is called inmate request to staff procedure, and it's also nicknamed cop-outs procedure. Now, the inmate in this case used the second procedure. The reason he used it is because his counselor directed him to use it.
When?
In June, Your Honor, of 2005.
Now, see, the issue here is whether he was actually his counselor then. That seems to be one dispute that was not resolved.
Your Honor,
what's his name?
Mr. Kramer?
Kramer, yeah.
And spelled differently between the name that my client gave me and the name. But here's the point. That's a genuine issue of material fact, Your Honor, whether or not the counselor gave whichever procedure, whichever forms that the counselor wanted. That's clearly, you know, a person in prison has no control of what he gets. So whatever he gets from his counselors is what he's going to take. And as a matter of fact, this particular inmate did use the first procedure to request 41 days of credit that he served. So he's familiar with that other procedure. He knows the length of time, at minimum, it takes 230 days to complete the first procedure. This inmate was only going to be in jail for 210 days, short time. And plus, it's common sense. If you need something quickly, the medical treatment, like his doctor recommends and that he knows that he needs, the faster procedure is the second procedure.
Now, would you say it takes 230 days to go through the proper, whatever this?
The first one, the one that the prison is saying that he should have used.
So are you saying that if he had followed that procedure, he couldn't have gotten treatment for 230 days?
Well, he couldn't have exhausted that.
Meaning if he didn't win? Or
exactly, and then he could proceed to go to court. But at the same time, Your Honor, the second procedure was the one that was given to him, and that's the one that seems applicable to someone who needs quick medical care. It's called inmate request to staff. He requested medical care from the immediate staff. Then he requested, then he sent it to the doctor according to the procedure, then all the way up to the warden. And still he did not receive it. Now, Your Honor, the first procedure, the one that they want to use, the administrative remedy, in its booklet, it states very clearly in the appendix on page 144 that when you have a claim of a grievance regarding a tort, you don't use this method. Now, the issue was raised whether or not the claim here is a tort. And I cited the case law to show that it is a tort. It is a Bivens action under the Eighth Amendment, cruel and unusual punishment. Cited ample case law from the Supreme Court showing it is a tort. And, Your Honors, I also, the lower court made a big error here by using the Okoro case, Okoro versus Callahan case, by saying that the employees are not liable under these circumstances. In the case of the Okoro case, that's a case that follows on the Hickman versus Murphy, where the inmates really can't go and attack the issues on his conviction. that dealt with his conviction. And this case has nothing to do with his conviction. He's simply stating that because the prison inmates blatantly and recklessly and intentionally did not want to give him the medical treatment, did not want to send him to a nearby VA hospital, or even transferring him to another prison where he can get this treatment, that's reckless. That's outrageous. What
ultimately do you want out of this?
Well, Your Honor, right now he's suffering, and I stated it in the, he's suffering because his hip had to be replaced, he can't work, and what I want is, Your Honor, compensation for the damages that...
You want damages.
Exactly, Your Honor, so that he can take care of himself. Right now he's in severe financial problems, and it really is an incredible, sad case.
So he's not looking for treatment. Now, what I'm looking at is if he's going back to this administrative process,
right.
If he were to have gone through the, you can name it cop-out or whatever, he would have gotten quicker treatment. Now, that's over with. He's not going to get treatment now. He's already been treated and got a hip replacement and did other things. So all you have left is you're looking for damages. Is that right?
Correct.
Is that
right.
Why you've insisted going back through this tort situation?
Judge Main, right now this individual is he can't work. The VA hospital can only treat him if he goes to it. He needs someone to take care of him at work, at home. He needs other things that has put him in this situation.
So is the only route to get these damages go through some sort of a tort allegation?
Correct. And
that,
a Bivens action under...
Because it may not work. That's why I'm asking. And I'm asking about is it an issue here of whether or not there's one word against another, whether the counselor Kramer was present when he asked for this versus whether he's assigned somewhere else. Is that an issue that needs to be resolved?
Your Honor, that is a genuine issue of material fact, and that's why most of
us... If it's resolved that, hypothetically at least, that he was the counselor who advised that, then what?
Well, Your Honor, let's say it wasn't. Let's say it wasn't Mr. Kramer. Let's say it was someone else.
Okay.
Let's say it was his brother. Let's say the records were at error in the time.
Well, all right.
There you go. Well, we need that motion for summary judgment shouldn't be granted.
But what's the ultimate result, though?
Well, the ultimate result, Your Honor, is to take it to...
The ultimate result is he should have gotten, if you were to win that, he should have gotten treatment.
He should have gotten treatment.
But now I don't know where all the damages and stuff come in. This is where you get back to, I don't...
Well, you're back. It's a tort action asking for damages, so for medical damages that he needs to care for himself.
You didn't
right
bring
now.
A Federal Tort Claims Act. This is a constitutional claim against the warden and the doctor. It's not a Federal Tort Claims Act against
correct.
The United States government. So we can drop that whole line of argument. Let's focus on the exhaustion issue, which is really the point of contention that's most at issue right now, and what you claim is a material issue of fact. On that issue, he says that Kramer sent him to the wrong procedure, essentially, or deprived him of the opportunity to use the right procedure.
Judge Sykes, if I could just say what he claims is that he was directed to use this procedure because it was faster and he was given the forms to use this procedure.
Right, but it turns out it was the wrong procedure. So
no,
didn't
no, Your Honor, it didn't turn out that it was the wrong procedure. It's the correct procedure. And I venture to say that if I had went into discovery, I'd find that medical requests are typically go through this procedure because it's faster. This
okay.
is what the counsel...
But he didn't exhaust them.
He did exhaust the second procedure, Your Honor. The one that he used that goes all the way up to the warden asking for medical treatment. He did exhaust that.
But that's not the applicable procedure here.
I'm contending it is, Your Honor, because the
well,
one
that's
that...
Well, that's a...
Right.
Not something you need discovery for, right?
Well,
it either is
Your Honor,
or it isn't under the regulations. My understanding is that it's not the right procedure, and I thought your claim was that he was deterred from using the right procedure because this officer, Kramer, inhibited him in some way by giving him erroneous directions or withholding forms or something like that.
Yes, that is correct. That's what he testified to. That's what his testimony is in there.
Right, so that's his claim. Is that
yes,
his?
Yes, okay. yes, Your Honor.
And
yes, Your Honor.
Kramer says, no, I wasn't even at the prison at that time. I was transferred. And that's what the district court rested its holding on.
Yes, Your Honor. And my contention is that's a genuine issue of material fact to resolve. And motion for initially it was a 12B motion. He converted it to a motion for summary judgment because no genuine issue of material fact. And I believe that that's a genuine issue of material fact.
Okay. And so basically your argument is we've got a swearing match between your client and Officer Kramer about whether he was or wasn't at the prison at the time and did or didn't withhold forms.
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. I'm done.
Okay.
Thank you.
I see my time's up. Time goes so fast here.
How much?
May it please the Court, my name is Thomas E. Keeper. I'm an assistant United States attorney from the Southern District of Indiana.
Why didn't you submit Officer Kramer's employment records so that we have some independent documentation about whether he was or wasn't employed at the prison, other than his affidavit? That's all we've got is his affidavit, right?
Certainly. We have his affidavit that he was transferred from the federal prison camp on grounds at the FCC Terre Haute to the United States Penitentiary, working in the penitentiary in a different capacity or in a counselor capacity, not the FPC.
So we've got a swearing match on that,
could
have been resolved.
We do have a dispute between what the plaintiff has alleged and what the what Counselor Kramer has responded in terms of his presence at the prison camp on June 3, 2005, when the plaintiff said that he met Counselor Kramer and that he was told by Counselor Kramer to use this cop-out procedure. Correct. We have that disputed issue between the two of them. However, the verified affidavit or the declaration under penalties of perjury from Counselor Kramer set out the factual issues of his non-presence and his employment transfer to the other facility.
Well, why does his affidavit prevail over the plaintiff's sworn testimony? Ordinarily, that's a swearing match, and you've got to have something else that'll break the tie.
Well, certainly,
if you want summary judgment, you didn't put anything else in.
Yes, Judge, but plaintiff doesn't dispute the issues that he was transferred to the Terre Haute penitentiary and that he wasn't at the prison. I mean, I guess in a roundabout way, if you assume that he said that Kramer told him at the prison camp, that's a way of alleging that he was present at the prison camp. But once that allegation came in from Kramer, the plaintiff didn't come back and say, oh, no, he wasn't at the penitentiary. He didn't dispute the fact that what Kramer was saying was inaccurate. At that point, he came back and said, well, maybe it was somebody else, as opposed to his original allegation and his only allegation that the reference was made specifically by Counselor Kramer.
So you're saying he conceded that maybe he's wrong, it was Kramer, it could have been someone else. Therefore, it wasn't necessary to prove that Kramer or put evidence in other than his statement that Kramer was not the counselor who gave him the advice?
Correct.
He changed his testimony or he changed his argument?
No, I think he changed his argument. I think his original allegation was that Counselor Kramer gave him this information, which in his two previous stays at the federal prison camp, Counselor Kramer was his case counselor at the prison camp. So it's understandable that he's thinking, I've got a case counselor, it's Kramer, and that's the one that told me June 3rd that I should use this procedure. But the fact of the matter is, it wasn't Counselor Kramer because Counselor Kramer wasn't there. In March of 2005, he had been transferred to the penitentiary and didn't go back over to the prison camp.
Did he withdraw his assertion that it was Counselor Kramer?
No.
No. So we still have that as his argument.
Yes, Your Honor. His statement has always been that he was specifically told this on June 3rd, 2005, by Counselor Kramer, and Counselor Kramer wasn't there. And that was the basis of the district court's finding that since he wasn't there, it's impossible for a reasonable jury to believe this.
Well, yes, but that requires the court and requires us to accept Counselor Kramer's affidavit over the plaintiff's sworn testimony. And we're not supposed to do that on summary judgment.
Well, absolutely, in a summary judgment, and that gets back to the issue of whether this type of an affirmative defense is resolved in an unenumerated 12b6 method or mode, or in a Rule 56 in terms of the burden of proof. And again, once Kramer's affidavit or declaration came into the record, plaintiff was silent on a specific response or any kind of reply to whether or not it would have been somebody else other than Kramer, or in fact that Kramer was there despite what he said.
Well, that was his original claim, and unless
Correct.
He withdrew that as an evidentiary matter, we're required to refrain from adjudicating a head-on factual conflict like that on a 12b6 motion converted to a summary judgment motion, which apparently is the way this procedurally went down, right?
Certainly. And again, this case was proceeding through the district court at a time before this court gave us guidance on through the Pavey decision on how these types of issues might be resolved. And looking back now, perhaps a hearing where these kinds of factual discrepancies could have been further developed, although the Pavey decision came out in June, I believe, and this decision was issued in August. And I think the district court felt that the record was clear in terms of the non-materiality of the disputed fact, and that it was a physical impossibility, and that no reasonable jury could have believed that Counselor Kramer told him that.
Those are saying two different things, to say it's non-material and to say that no jury could reasonably believe the plaintiff's story. Those are two different things. So which is it?
The district court made the finding that
This is de novo review, so you tell me what your argument is.
Okay.
Is this a non-material dispute or is this a non-dispute?
It is a non-dispute in that Kramer was not at the FPC.
But all we have on that is two sworn statements, one saying he was and one saying he wasn't. And that's my point. You didn't put in any time records. You didn't put in any employment records. It would have been a really easy thing to do to put the custodian of records on an affidavit, put in, you know, his transfer records, and break the tie that way. But you didn't do it. And so
no,
we're kind of stuck with this record.
We are, and it is... Again, without reply back from the plaintiff that it was someone other than Counselor Kramer, or that Counselor Kramer was there.
It's not his burden. You know, it's yours.
I understand.
We've got a swearing match here.
I understand. And that, again, under the Pavey decision, may suggest that the district court sets a hearing and works through that type of factual dispute. The post-Pavey decisions... in terms of how the courts are resolving this, has it resolved on motions for summary judgment where
right. I'm
there isn't
that. And
that's
it can't be resolved that way, but we don't have the record to resolve it that way just yet. You know, may well be resolved that way eventually.
I guess I asked you a question. Just hypothetically, if Kramer, what's to say what he said Kramer did, what's the remedy? Where does it go from there? If Kramer, at this stage, didn't give him the forms or didn't do something, who will allow him to proceed?
Because well, that's another...
About a tort claim and all that. What's the remedy if it's only the issue that we're talking about here, that there was some... that Kramer did say... or didn't give him something that he asked for or something. Is there a damage award coming? Is there something... What goes beyond that? What's his remedy?
I think the remedy he's seeking is individual damages from the defendants.
Yeah.
Money damages from the individual defendants under Bivens' theory. The other aspect of what was before the district court in this regard, while he says that Kramer told him to use this cop-out procedure and that he then wouldn't give him a BP-9, the undisputed, again, evidence from Kramer's affidavit or declaration was that there are three case counselors, a unit manager, a prison camp administrator. The prison camp is an open environment as opposed to the penitentiary where you go through your case counselor for this type of relief. He could have gotten this form from anybody. The fact of the matter is, and the record's undisputed on this, he didn't proceed through the administrative remedy process. He didn't even attempt to go through the administrative remedy process. What he wanted was immediate medical attention. He filed a cop-out, which is an informal way of an inmate to talk to the prison management. This is something I need in my prison environment. It's the first step before you go to the administrative remedy procedure, correct. But if you don't get the relief that you're looking for with the cop-out, then you must go through the three-step administrative remedy procedure before you come to court. So he had remedies from someone other than Counselor Kramer. That was undisputed and also came into the district court's granting a summary judgment and supports, I think, the court's finding that there were no material issues of fact.
Was it established that the procedure, this cop-out procedure, preceded the mandatory administrative procedure?
It specifically stated in the administrative procedure program statement that the first step is to seek an informal resolution from the staff. And if that, and that is the cop-out that's described in the inmate handbook.
That's what he did.
That's what he did. And he took it no further.
That's the problem. He didn't do the formal procedure, which has to follow.
He didn't do the administrative procedure
right.
that precedes his ability to file suit in
right.
federal court.
Right.
But, I mean, regardless of why he filed it, he did file this cop-out, but the procedure, according to the evidence, has to be followed by a formal administrative thing.
The three-step procedure. After, if he's not satisfied with the informal resolution between he and staff or he and the management, he asks the warden for relief under the administrative remedy procedure. If he's not satisfied with that, it goes to the region. If he's not satisfied with that, he goes to the national level. At that point, he has a remedy to come to the federal court. He did not do those. He did not exhaust his required mandatory administrative remedies, and the district court should be affirmed.
Thank you.
Mr. Salem, I'll give you another minute.
Just two very brief points, Your Honor. Judge Kenny, the procedure that they want the inmate to use requires that he follows this first cop-out procedure, and he did so. And since he's there for a very short time, 210 days, he couldn't have possibly completed the entire procedure based on the time that's permitted within the procedure. So, in effect, he did follow the procedure they want by following what's called BP-Admin 70 within the procedure that they want. And Judge Sykes, I just want to confirm that the inmate did not take back his testimony. He never testified that someone else could have been there. It's very clear that his testimony was it was Counselor Kramer that gave him the form, and there is no record for Counselor Kramer to add to his affidavit, as you said, in the record. That's all I have. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Thanks to both counsel. The case will be taken under advisement. We move to